This is a Piccolo podcast production.
Welcome to Adam Shand at Large. Today's story isn't a crime story, but it is a mystery. It was a global sensation when it happened that raised the perennial question, are we alone in the universe? In September 1994, a group of up to 60 children at a tiny rural school outside Harare, Zimbabwe, saw what they described as a silver craft with bright flashing lights that landed just outside the school's boundary. The kids said they saw one or two figures alighting from the craft. The Rua incident is one of the most discussed alien visitation stories of all times, and to this day, it remains unexplained, at least by conventional thinking. There was some physical evidence. A few days later, a photographer found flattened grass and strange wedge-shaped indentations in the soil where the craft had reportedly been. Despite this, the Rua incident has been dismissed as a hoax, or a prank on the teachers, or even a case of delusion through mass hysteria. But the kids, who are now all grown up, are still sticking to their story. Munyate Marove was 11 at the time and a prefect at the school. I caught up with him when I was in Zimbabwe recently, and he gave the best and most detailed account of this incident I've ever heard. Enjoy.
So my name is Munyate Kudzanai Murove. I was born in 1983. Grew up here, went to primary school, high school here. Had a great middle class upbringing.
What did your parents do?
My dad is an engineer. So he worked for various corporates, and he was, you know, professional for decades. My mother worked for British Airways, you know, for a very long time as well. I think 2 decades or something. Middle class.
Right, yeah. So you grew up in Harare, basically, in Harare, yeah. And in a sort of multiracial, middle class environment.
Absolutely. Went to private schools, primary schools. High school was also private school. So yes, very multiracial, very diverse, yeah. Diverse.
And so you find yourself at Ariel School at Rua. What was Ariel School like? What's Rua first?
Rua is, I guess it was a startup town at that point, kind of like 30 kilometers outside of Harare, going northeasterly. And private school, farm school, started by the farmers around who lived in that area. Right.
But you were a city kid. You were sent out there.
I was, but it was a great experience because I only did 2 years at Ariel, but I was coming from a private school in Harare. And it was a very different experience in that it was a lot more wholesome, if I want to put it like that. Great learning environment. You know, I thrived, I think, as a student. Yeah, the environment was really good in allowing, you know.
And were there more city kids like you at the school?
I would say the majority of the kids were city kids. I mean, we would all do that 30-kilometer trek in the morning and 30-kilometer back.
Oh, so you were day boy?
I was a day scholar, yeah.
Scholar,
day boy,
as they say. Yeah, we were called day boys.
Yeah.
My private school. Okay, so you trekked out there every day. And what were the kind of things you were into and exposed to? Paint a picture. I was coming to Zimbabwe at that time. I'd first come actually in December, just after this incident had occurred. Right. So I've got a fairly good understanding of what Harare was like. But it was exposed to international things, but there wasn't a lot of exposure. The ZBC TV was pretty basic. Mm-hmm. What were you exposed to as a kid growing up like that?
Well, quite a lot of things, actually. I mean, from a media point of view, yes, there was ZBC, but I mean, DSTV was already there at that time. I remember I started playing rugby, you know, so South Africa won the World Cup at that point. And I was an All Blacks fan, Zimzan Brooks. You know, these guys, like, for me, you know, I was a big sport junkie at that stage.
So you didn't feel sheltered and isolated?
No. There was, you know, enough exposure, I would say.
Yeah, right. I guess what I'm getting at is trying to understand, because a lot of the time this Rua incident, the storytellers have not been the people that experienced it. It's those who came to talk to the people and their interpretations and maybe even their spin on things to suit their arguments. You know, how do you feel that, we'll talk about the incident in detail, but how do you feel that incident over the years since September 16th, 1994, how's that story been told to your satisfaction or otherwise?
Well, listen, I think the majority of the people that approached me and the whole group of us, they wanted to tell a story, like you said, you know, from a point of view of trying to tell people that these things exist, right? So that was the push of the story. It wasn't exactly asking us what impact it had on us, for example.
Yeah. Listen to it again now.
Yeah.
But tell me, that morning, 16th of September, what was happening at school?
So that time, I was a prefect. I was part of the new crop of prefects that were coming in to replace the grade sevens. So I was at the end of my grade six. Basically, we were on field duty, where when it's break time, you're sort of watching over the other kids and just ensuring that, you know, everything goes well, taking the kids, especially the younger ones, to their respective classes after break time. So as it happens, I'm on the field, you know, I'm with a group of friends.
Where are the rest of the faculty, the teachers?
If I understand correctly, there was a staff meeting. So there were no teachers on the field at that time.
So how far away were they, if you can recall?
I mean, it's a block of classrooms and, you know, field and office blocks, right? So they were in the office blocks. It's not too far away. I mean, if there's any noise on the field, as in something unusual, they would probably hear
right.
it. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're there with your friends and...
There with my friends and having break. I see a bunch of kids at the corner of the field, just along the edge of the boundary, because we had a boundary. You couldn't cross that boundary. So I'm looking at these kids and they're pointing at something, right? And there's a whole bunch of them, probably about five or six or something. I mean, there were little pockets of kids, as you can imagine, on a field, but these ones were pointing at something, right? So I'm curious. I walked over there. It's probably from where I was, 30-meter walk maybe, because I'm walking the length of the field to get there. And my main reason for walking there was like, okay, what are they looking at and why are they on the edge of the boundary? Because you're not allowed to, you know, so the prefect in me is like, you know, let me go and prefect, right? And so I get there and these kids who are younger than me, of course, are like, look, it's a spaceship. So I'm like, what? What do you mean? You know, so I look over and across the boundary, it's separated by like a dust road, and it's probably another 25 to maybe 35 meters down. There's this silver disc-like thing.
How long was it, do you think?
I really couldn't say, but listen, it was long enough to be visible to everyone who was looking at it. Like,
you'd probably been to the airport. You'd seen airplanes before at that time. Was it of a similar size kind of thing?
No, I mean... I'm also small, right, at this time. So everything looks big. But it was big enough to notice, to be able to really see that, listen, this is something that is different. It's shiny. It's silver. It's got lights.
This is the middle of the day on a
this
bright
is
September day.
The middle of the day, bright, shiny day. You can't miss it. It's literally glowing, you know, in terms of shiny silver, right? And I could make out the lights, orange, green, red, you know, and they were flickering, right? So I'm like, that can't be a spaceship. Because by this time, I've watched enough sci-fi. I mean, I was a consumer of sci-fi. I was reading comics at this age. I'm like, but nah, that's not a spaceship. Impossible, right? I'm old enough to have that kind of debate in my head. And we're looking at this thing, and I could just make out that it was on top of the grass. So you can imagine tall, sort of, felt grass, right? But I can't make out any landing gear or anything like that. But it's clearly on top of the grass. It's not sitting. It hasn't made like a dent in the grass, so to speak. It's on top of it.
It's hovering.
It's hovering. You'd say it's hovering.
Don't put words in your mouth.
I'm very careful to say hovering because, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing about this story, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess over the time, people that can adopt different parts of each other's story. You've got to be very careful about what you remember and what you actually don't. Mm.
So I remember distinctly being on top of the grass. Right? I couldn't see any landing gear, but I could see the lights. For me, there's this debate going on and, you know, the kids are gathering up. So this crowd is getting bigger, right? And I'm thinking to myself, no, it can't be real. There's some explanation to this. So I'm thinking maybe some of the groundsmen, I don't know, maybe they left this huge silver dish, you know, because that's kind of like what it looked like. It's silver, yes, but it's like two tones, because what's underneath is kind of like a darker silver, because on top it's shining because of the sun, right? And the lights are also on top. So there's this debate going on in my head. Like there's an explanation for this. It can't be a UFO. You know, it can't be a spaceship, right? Because that would mean there are aliens, right? So, I mean, the implications to this, right? But like I was saying, you know, the kids are gathering because people are now seeing this from different vantage points on the field, right? So you can imagine that kids are coming around and everyone is pointing. You know, some are like, that's a spaceship. Others are like, no. But there's a sense of like, wow, what are we looking at? A kind of marveling of sorts, because we're staring at this thing for a while. I'd say give or take a good 5 minutes. And then I think when everything changed for me was when I distinctly remember I had a young girl on my right side. She was, you know, just slightly shorter than me, and an even younger boy on my left side. So I turned around to look at the crowd around me, the kids around me. And, you know, you're just seeing kids talking and marveling and all of that. And then I looked back at this thing, and there was kind of like a, oh, from everyone, including myself, because this little, dare I say, man appeared on top of this spacecraft. And I distinctly remember thinking, okay, that can't be real. Now, I'm kind of not panicking yet, but I'm sort of trying to understand what I'm looking at. Like, is that a human being? What is that? Is it the groundsman? Is it another kid? Is it all these questions are coming into my head? Because, I mean, the groundsman wore overalls, you know, you couldn't really tell from afar, you know, that kind of thing. So you've got all these
questions. But they didn't come to work in the spacecraft.
They didn't come not in anything like that. So I remember looking at, should I say, this creature, and I remember looking and seeing that his arms were really long. They were literally like reaching his, should I say, knees. And then that's when, for me, a distinct feeling of fear came upon me. Because I'm looking at this creature's skin. It's also kind of like glowing and shiny, you know, almost like what a python would do in the sun, right? Imagine like a gray python. And it's kind of like translucent, and the eyes are big. They're there. You can see. I couldn't make out a mouth. I couldn't make out a nose, you know. So I'm like, okay, that's not human. And I, you know, there was no way to tell that is it male or female. You know, it's just short legs, long arms, big oval head. Imagine like kind of like almost like a out of shape Smartie, right? So you've got a Smartie, right, but it's kind of crushed on the side or compressed, and big eyes. So for me, I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking, I didn't see it move. It was just there, static. And I was like, okay, that's not human. It wasn't there before. It's now there. Where did it come from? That's probably an alien, because what is that thing that it's on? And fear just gripped me. I remember being terrified, and I just, the little girl was beside me on my right. I just took her hand, and the little boy on my left, I kind of like, almost like carried him, because he was really small, right? I think I was in grade 3 at that time, or grade 2 even. You know, I'm not really sure, but, and I remember turning around and just telling all the kids around me to just run. She said, listen, run, get back to class, move away, like, and I'm like trying to, you know, move as quickly as I can, trying to run, and I'm, you know, telling everyone, I'm like, just run, 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 because I'm thinking, okay, abductions, Close Encounters of the Third Kind type movies, you know. I had no idea what was going to happen.
You had seen those films?
I had seen those films, right? E.T., I mean, so for me, it's like, it was very real. I've met other students who said they didn't see anything, right?
Yeah.
From Mario, right? Same time, same place, and all of that. And my own sister, twin sister, is like, I never saw anything.
Where was she on that day? She was on the field?
She was on the field, apparently. My younger brother saw it from a different angle of the field. But my sister, right now, even up to this day, she's like, no, you guys, I don't know what you saw, but it wasn't a spaceship and there was no alien. But for me, it's like, listen, I know what I saw because I was terrified. And I remember that.
So what happened next? You're now taking the kids away?
I'm like running across the field. I'm like, everybody, you know, run, go back. And
did people follow you?
People did follow me because at this point, they knew I was a prefect. And
because you had been one of the first on the scene then. You were the first four or five or something, I think you were saying before.
I wouldn't know if I was one of the first. I would say I was most likely one of the closest.
So you're going back to the classroom, I presume.
Running back.
And you're a prefect. Your duty is to the teachers.
Yeah.
I guess, did you think about that?
I mean, not at that time, but all I'm thinking is I need to get as many kids into their classrooms as possible, as well as get to my own classroom with the kids that I was made in charge of, right? And we did. We got to the classroom that I was in charge of. Kids are crying. Some are excited.
And some didn't see anything.
Some didn't see anything.
They must have felt the strangest, I guess, in a way. Like,
but I mean, you know, at this point, I'm not like asking people like, what did you see? And, you know, that kind of thing. But I remember some kids hiding under desk. I saw one child hiding under a desk, like trying to just like, what is going on? And about two kids where at the back of the classroom, you've got like an area where you put your bags underneath. It's like a cavity almost, right? It's like a bench, right? And the kids were hiding underneath there. I know that because I had to go and get them from there.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So didn't the teachers now ask?
They did. The teacher came. I remember her.
Who was that? Who was your teacher?
So she wasn't my teacher. She was the teacher of the class that I was made in charge of. Her name was Mrs. Ashman. She was my music teacher. I loved it a bit. So, and she asked, like, what happened? And I'm like, well, we saw a spaceship and an alien. And she just, she had this blank look on her face at that point. And I think she was just trying to understand what was going on because you've got kids that are crying, right? And kids saying that they saw an alien.
Do you think she believed you?
I think she didn't know what to believe. You can imagine for an adult at that point, the implications are pretty incredible, right? So all you're seeing is a kind of mass hysteria, I guess, if you want to put it like that. But of kids that are convinced that they saw something.
That phrase, mass hysteria, is very important in this story because some academics have used this notion of mass hysteria to discount your accounts and say that somehow there's this mass, almost hypnosis, around an event, possibly suggested by the fact that there had been sightings of a satellite rocket burning up in the atmosphere over Southern Africa in the days prior. So so they talk about this as a children under this mass hysteria. I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, your account is very precise.
Yeah. I mean, I was old enough to know what I was seeing, what I was looking at, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is that there were kids around me. I wasn't the only one. And I think adults have to ask themselves that if kids are going to be in a panic, it didn't just come out of nowhere. To say mass hysteria, to define it as mass hysteria, to try and kind of say they didn't see anything would be incorrect. Describe it as panic, because that's what it was, right? Where does panic come from, right? It's fear. It's fear because we saw something that we didn't understand, and we knew it wasn't in our, or from our realm of understanding, you know, in that sense. So the panic came from somewhere. If the hysteria was there, it's probably much later on, because maybe you've got kids who didn't see anything, and they're kind of also like, probably now also panicking, right? And there's kind of like this wave, if you want to put it like that.
Yeah.
But it started from somewhere.
Right. So you went home, though.
Right.
You went home that night.
Right.
Yeah. Saw your parents. You told them. What was their reaction?
Very interesting. I mean, when I look back now, but my mom was, I would say, at best intrigued. right? Kind of like, really? Oh, okay. Well, are you sure? And then it doesn't really go any further than that, right?
And she turns to your twin sister and says, what did you see?
So funny enough, I don't remember having a conversation with my twin sister there, right? My younger brother was there. I remember him being there because at this point, you know, you're kind of recounting the story, right? And you're very excited, right? You're telling him, like, we saw a spaceship, we saw an alien, you know, and you kind of, there's excitement. And my brother is also coming in, he's chiming in, he's like, yes, you know, it was this silver thing, it had lights, and and we're telling her this. She didn't dismiss us. Like I'm saying, it was more of, really? Well, okay, you know, she didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think sure. That's... Everyone's the same. I think the headmaster was similar. He said, they definitely saw something. I just can't come at this idea of saying it's a UFO or an alien. Right. It's just too much for them, I guess.
Well, I'd say it was too much for him, Mr. Mackey, our headmaster. Because, again, you're an adult, right? You can process these things a lot quicker and you understand the implications. But just imagine, right, your worldview at that point, getting to grips with the fact that alien life exists.
Yeah, the interview I saw, he didn't discount it. He did. I mean, I think he was leaning towards this mass hysteria idea.
Theory, yeah.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, okay, the kids have gone home. The parents have been told. Some parents have now come to the school or contacted the school to say what happened.
Yeah.
And did the school take any formal steps to verify or at least understand what had happened?
You know, I think when I look back, the next couple of days were like a flurry of activity, right? I remember the BBC coming. I remember BBC interviewing some of my friends. I remember the professor, of course, the Harvard professor. I remember another lady who came with a guy who supposedly they were there to measure radiation. And we were fascinated by this because we were like, radiation? So if there's radiation, then it means we're all going to die and you know.
The drama continues.
The drama continues, right? But for the next couple of days, there was a lot of activity of being asked, what did you see?
Tim Leach came on the 19th of September. He was there at midday, 3 days after. Mm-hmm. After his appearance, Cynthia Hind, who's a local UFO researcher and part of a global network, very much into the idea of extraterrestrial life and visitations. So she comes and she interviews you. Do you remember her interview with you?
Well, I don't remember her name, neither do I remember. I remember a lady coming with, you know, a guy who had some equipment, supposedly for...
Absolutely true.
Interesting.
And they went out there and they were looking for signs that this guy... I don't think they found anything, though, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Who knows what the propulsion system was. So, worldwide focus.
Right.
And how did that feel as a 12-year-old lad from, you know, Harare suddenly...
I didn't realize what was... the full implications of what was going on. Obviously, at this point, you just... or at this age, you just want to tell your story, right? You want to tell what you saw and what you felt and to draw it and to try and prove to the world that you're not crazy. You know, this kind of... I remember at some point distinctly feeling like, okay, I hope I don't sound crazy. I hope they believe me. I personally didn't get a sense of that message. I didn't get any communication from the being. Like I said, for me, it was just pure fear. I didn't get a sense of they were trying to communicate or, you know, if they were, I didn't give them time to. I was pretty much trying to get out of there. So I remember other kids saying, you know, they'd seen something days before our actual sighting, you know, above the staff room, at the fields. I remember hearing talk that also some groundsmen had seen something in their compound and where they stay. You know, so I can't, you know, speak to that, of course. I'm just saying what I heard. And, yeah, there were kids that said, listen, they communicated with us. You know, it just didn't happen with me.
Yeah, because the criticism is that Mac suggested this in a way, that somehow he had introduced this into the conversation because this was his belief. And I think this was the start of some of the problems for belief in your story and your fellow students' stories, because people began to examine Mac's credibility and Hind's credibility and this type of thing, and suddenly became all about that. And the story sort of shrunk from being like one of the great UFO experiences. Suddenly there were skeptics everywhere, and people were suddenly saying, you know, the headlines were like, kids in African school, inverted commas, see inverted commas, yeah, UFO, all this type of thing. Yeah. Let's roll back a bit, though. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how the interviews were done. Where were the interviews done? Were you on your own? Were you with a group? How were they done?
I remember being part of a group, right, in a classroom. If I remember correctly, the interviews didn't just happen on one day. I think it was a series of days where different kids were interviewed at different times.
And what was his demeanor? How did you remember him?
I remember,
American from Harvard, very eminent professor, psychiatrist.
Yeah, I remember him being quiet guy, right? I mean, very an intense listener, I'll put it like that. You know, he was listening to us. He was asking, okay, what did you see? How did that make you feel? You know, that kind of thing. So, well, I think for me at that age, I didn't know any of this stuff, right? I can't say that I knew, I even knew what a skeptic was, right? All I'm trying to do is tell my own story. But of course, as I grew up, right, and as I got older and I'm having my own questions, existential questions, actually, because now I'm being told to believe this, for example. So Christianity, for example. And I'm like, well, okay, that's all well and good, but what about aliens, right? And I'm bringing this up to a pastor or to, you know, in a church setting or whatever, and everyone's looking at me like, what, are you crazy? The point I'm trying to make is that, of course, they're going to be skeptics, particularly adults, because as an adult, it's going to crush certain belief systems that you've grown up with. It's going to cause you to question and ask really deep questions about what you believe and why. And I would want to say as a defense mechanism, your average adult is going to say, well, no, it doesn't exist. You know, they couldn't possibly have seen that.
Yeah, and kind of straight, because I got here, as I say, I was working in 94, 95.
Right.
And people weren't talking about it. The journalists weren't talking about it anymore.
Interesting.
And I was red hot for stories. And by this time, it seemed like it had all kind of died down. And people were saying, oh, well, it's these African kids in this remote school. And then there was a story that also, I think, challenged the... Cynthia Hines said, listen, the reason why all these accounts are real is because these kids are all farm kids and they hadn't seen movies, they hadn't been exposed to modern media, which actually wasn't true.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of debunked.
Okay.
And that was another step towards the mythologizing of this thing. The desire by Hind and Mack, who were both very pro. In fact, Mack was disciplined, I guess, by Harvard.
Harvard,
Because he was telling people who'd had experiences with aliens that they were real.
Mm.
And maybe encouraging much rather than having a scientific dispassion, you know.
Right.
Did you get that sense with him that he was there to confirm?
I mean, at this age, I can't say that. All I can say is that he was asking us questions. I don't remember at any point, you know, being told what I'd seen.
Right. Or didn't say, oh, by the way, did he happen to say this or did he do this?
Right, there were no leading sort of
correct
questions or, you know, no loaded questions. He was really asking. I remember being asked, like, what did you see? And I told my story and that was that. He didn't sort of, even his reactions, they were not like, really? Did you really see that? No, you really didn't see that. Kind of, you know, you didn't get a sense of that. He was just asking questions.
Mm.
You know, so,
there's also the African culture side of things, and people talk about the belief in the supernatural, Tokoloshes, for instance, and Chipoko, and could you explain what they are in the Shona tradition?
Okay, well, in the Shona spiritual tradition, there's evil spirits, should I say, or an evil people that are going to do bad things. They're going to use, you know, whether you want to call a spiritual system or energy systems, you know, they're going to use those things to get their way, whether it's to kill someone or whether it's to punish someone or to just cause misery. So the general belief is that that can happen in various ways. You can bring it upon yourself as an individual, as a family, or you can seek it to basically, you know, send it to someone else, right?
Okay.
It goes both ways, right? Basically, anyone can dabble in it. It just depends on your intentions. Yeah, so the Tokoloshes are a kind of, I guess, what's the equivalent? I would say maybe an Irish leprechaun.
An evil one.
An evil one, right?
Evil
or a troll, maybe.
A troll,
right?
More like a troll.
More like a troll.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, at that time or any time since, have you ever considered, in terms of your Shona cultural background, mm-hmm. and tried to look for an explanation in that?
Absolutely. In a lot of ways, right, this incident that happened to me put me in a position where I would question, right, a lot of things. So from religious beliefs to even African beliefs, I was always then inquisitive, like, okay, well, how would that work? What is that? What is it, you know? I remember I would ask my tetes, you know, my aunts, whoever I could at that point. So, yes, I think within the scope of Africanness, it's not out of the ordinary to hear these stories, or it's not outside our realm of understanding, say, like, these are possibilities. So to me, alien life form was never, like, foreign, right? Because, okay, well, we know they're goblins and tokoloshis, so how can they not be aliens, for example?
Right. And they could be one and the same.
And they could be, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe we're calling goblins goblins, but they're actually aliens, right? I mean, listen.
It's an explanation to a phenomenon which you're unfamiliar.
Yeah.
So is it fair to say that sort of changed your life? It was a formative moment. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it only happened much later on in my early 20s where I could then question, because, you know, things are happening in your early 20s, whether it's family things, whether it's, you know, university, you're growing, you're changing, right? And you're being basically told to fit into a particular system. And for me, it was a religious one at that point, right? So I went heavy into the church, started off with the traditional Methodist, and then went into this Pentecostal, you know, I remember that point, you know, Hillsong, you know, all of that. Like, I was massive. I was a youth pastor, but I had all of these questions, serious questions that nobody could entertain at best. And at worst, nobody wanted to answer, right? Because imagine you're asking someone, they've just read you scripture saying, you know, God is the creator of the earth and the world. And, you know, basically humans are so special, we're the only ones, right? Because Christ came and died for us. Mm. And I'm like, well, how do you know it was just us? And how do you know that Christ maybe wasn't an alien? You start entertaining all of these ideas that...
And people say, oh, Mignotti, you're crazy. Yeah.
Right? I remember getting into a verbal, real intense verbal argument with another youth pastor, because I was like, listen, I don't believe that we're alone. And I dared say that Jesus could have been an alien, because...
He's doing some pretty funky stuff.
He's doing some pretty funky stuff. And there's some pretty funky stuff happening in the Bible, right?
Yes.
Elijah or Elisha, you know, it says he went off in a chariot of fire. You know, to me, I'm like, well, that sounds like a rocket, right?
There's the Jacob's ladder thing as well, climbing up to heaven on the ladder.
Jacob's ladder. All of this.
I don't know much more than that. Don't test me. But yeah, so I can see how challenging this was for you. And I guess only those that have experienced it could really understand it. So did you keep in touch with those people?
Not really, no. I mean, I've got a couple of friends, one or two, you know, that I actually, because they were personal friends, and they were friends of my sister and all of that. We've kept in touch. But funny enough, it's not like when we meet, we talk about it. We're actually talking about life and other things.
But there's been documentaries made, there's been stories periodically get made. And I mean, I guess when these things come up and people get interviewed, I mean, I saw one story, for instance, there was one white girl who was interviewed and she said, I'm the only one left here in Zimbabwe that experienced that. They've all effed off to Canada or the US or something. Yeah. Did you read that? I don't know.
Yeah.
But so it's a very singular experience. But have there been no moments we kind of go like, whoa, we shared this thing all those years ago and look where it's got to? Or
well, with my brother, yes. Because we would then have these deep, intense conversations about what we experienced and what it means and the possibilities that are out there, right? I briefly had a conversation with an old friend, a long time ago, you know, probably 6-7 years ago or something. We met at a bar and, you know, it's like you're catching up and then it kind of comes up. But nothing in detail, like, so what did it mean for your life type thing?
You know?
It's not like this deep, heavy conversation. It's like, hey, shit, we saw aliens, you know. Remember that? Oh, let's have a beer. Oh. You know, it's like,
what's our aliens?
You know?
Yeah. But each one probably had their own. And that's what I'm getting at. And there was that... Yeah. Emily Trim, I think she was one of the...
Emily Trim. Kids. So I was in the same year with her older brother.
And she created all these artworks around it. Emily and it's become a big theme of her life, this one moment.
Right. Right.
And I guess in your way, you've moved on in different spheres with a questioning mind as of all this. But it hasn't, you haven't become bogged down in it.
No. And I'm not. I'm even worse now than I was before, right?
Yeah. It's one thing they say about Shona people is when they, before they go to school or the church, and they're growing up in the village, they see lights, they see phenomena, they believe in the spirits, right? And they, but when they go to church or they go to school, they come back, they don't see them anymore.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny you brought, because that's a perfect example of what I would term, you know, it's a function of colonization, right? Because what did colonization bring with it? It brought the church and a system of living within society, right? With accepted and understood social norms, right? Anything outside of that is, no, you can't be like that. And the church was used to great effect concerning these, you know, phenomena, if you want to put it like that, because it's like, well, now those things don't matter, or they don't even exist, right? Because Christ has taken all of that away, kind of thing. So you've got people...
Blind faith.
Yeah, blind faith. Like, and if you don't believe, there's a problem with you, because then you're not a good Christian, and therefore you're going to go to hell, right? So nobody wants to go to hell, right? Everyone's going to say, like, even if they've seen, and I've personally, I've experienced things, and I've talked to people who've experienced even far more mind-blowing things, but they'll never, ever say that in public or tell people, because it's like, well, how do they reconcile that with their faith, for example?
Yeah. So right. On one level, you've been challenged to disavow that experience.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm very glad to have shared these stories today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
That was Munyate Morove with his incredible story of the alien visitation to Rua, Zimbabwe. We'll be following up on this story with further reactions and witness accounts as they come to hand.
I have to say, Adam, I was a little bit skeptical when you ran this story by me. You know, I was thinking Chinese weather balloons, I was thinking hoaxes, but that was a very powerful interview, and it is actually an extraordinary story. So we're going to be doing some more episodes on this because there's a lot more out there, but excellent work.
Mate, stay skeptical. You are our bullshit detector on Adam Shand at Large. I need one of those, so you can trust me. But thank you for that. Next week on Adam Shand at Large, the real story of Chopper Reed, how Uncle Chop Chop punked you all and laughed all the way to hell or heaven, depending on where you think Chopper Reed went. Now, don't forget to subscribe to Adam Shand at Large at your favorite podcast platform. And also, the links to our social platforms will be in the show notes. Thank you very much.